Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
We're going to be covering Canto 1, Chapter 3, Texts 25, 26, and 27. Chapter 3 of Canto 1 is dealing with the incarnations of Krishna. Because a question was asked, this is Chapter 3, a question was asked in Chapter 1. Six questions were asked, but one of them was, please describe the forms of the Lord as they appear within this created realm. But it's all already also been asked, please describe how the Lord performs his activity of creation. So in and within that which he creates, there are forms of the Lord that will appear. Please describe those forms of the Lord that will appear within the cosmic manifestation. So the agents of creation are the first three of the forms of the Lord that are described, the Purusha avatars. They're forms of the Lord, and they're specifically for the function or purpose of creation, although they're transcendental. They have a function or service on behalf of Krishna. And then other types of avatars are described. We're going to hear the final of the Leela avatars, and we're also going to hear about Manvantara avatars. What are the Manvantara avatars? The Manus. What are the Manus? Manus are the lawgivers for mankind. When each day of Brahma, for a fixed term of office, 71 yuga cycles, there's some manu, qualified person. And one of the subject matters in the Bhagavatam, in addition to answering this question, there's 10 topics that any Mahapurana will cover. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the Mahapurana. There's Mahapuranas, Puranas, and Upa-Puranas, kind of like small fries, little guys, and Puranas, then Mahapuranas. And Mahapuranas are the 18 principal Puranas. So in those principal Puranas, they also discuss these 10 topics from different perspective. Srimad Bhagavatam discusses them in the following way. The Manvantara avatars is mentioned in this verse, in this section, text 27. There are Manvantara avatars. But then the third canto begins with the first of the 14. What's his name? The first of the 14 Manus is?
Swayambhuva.
You knew it. Yeah. Swayambhuva Manu. Swayambhuva Manu is the first Manu. And the lineage from Swayambhuva Manu is then discussed in the third canto. There's the older brother, or older son, Priyavrata. And his younger brother is Uttanapada, who becomes the father of Dhruva Maharaj. And then the lineage from Dhruva is described. I mean, that there's, they certainly spent a number of chapters discussing Dhruva Maharaj. But there's the lineage of kings. To say the Manus, it implies, just like if you say Mr. So-and-so, Mr. So-and-so has a family. And you describe Mr. So-and-so, you describe Mr. So-and-so's family. Commonly. Right. Anyway. It's traditional, it's respectful, it's part of the topic about the person. And then the lineage of kings from those, from that person. So that spans all the way to the beginning of the fifth canto. Because at the end of the fourth canto, we find the lineage of kings from Uttanapada breaks because the sons all become renunciates under the capable guidance of Narada Muni. So, Swayambhuva Manu has a problem. He has to continue the lineage of kings, so he doesn't have any other sons, so he goes to his eldest son, Priyavrata, first canto. Oh, Priyavrata, I've got some service for you. Yes, Daddy, what is it? I want you to become emperor of the universe. Oh. I don't know if I can do that service. So Narada comes and, Narada, you're my guru, tell him. I don't have to get married. Lord Brahma sees it's a big problem. He comes. Lord Brahma makes Priyavrata a promise. You become the king, but at the end of, you, even if you become entangled in worldly affairs, you'll become free from that following because you've set the proper foundation. You'll become liberated. Okay, I'll become the emperor of the universe. Reluctantly. Not like the popular elections that take place. So, then another, so the other manus are described, and some of them in a very summary way, some of them in detail, because within their reign, important avatars appear. But in the ninth canto, the manu number 7 is elaborately discussed because that's the manu in which we are at present. It's very nice system. So, text 25 is the last of the Leela avatars. Who is the last avatar that will appear at the end of Kali Yuga?
Kala.
Well,
Kalki.
How do you know?
Hearing from Sadhu.
Huh?
Hearing from Sadhu.
Hearing from Sadhu. How do the sadhus know? How do the sadhus know?
Scripture.
By scripture. And scriptures know because scripture is something that's coming from the Supreme Lord in disciplic succession. Forget where it was I was reading within the purport of the Bhagavatam. Where before Vyasadeva wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, trying to recall what was the context of this discussion. Ah, it's in the eighth canto with the advent of Matsya Avatar as the worshipable deity of Svayambhuva Manu. And so prior to this age, where Vyasadeva writes the Vedas, there's a description where Matsya Avatar spoke the Vedas to Svayambhuva Manu. He not only appeared and performed this leela of getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and too big for the ocean. Then Svayambhuva, King Satyavrata recognized, not only a talking fish, this is the personality of Godhead, who is exhibiting transcendental power. But in that, so he, when he spoke, he preserved the Vedas, but he also spoke the Vedas very kindly to King Satyavrata. And in that context, there's also mentioned that prior to Vyasadeva's writing and speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, prior to that, there was a version of Srimad Bhagavatam, because Bhagavatam is eternal. What Vyas manifested was just the Bhagavatam. It was done in a very expert way, but he manifested it from something that already existed. He didn't just like pull it out of the air. So Vidura had heard a version of the Bhagavatam from Maitreya, and that was a popular version, apparently, before Vyasadeva's. But people wanted to hear Vyasadeva's, especially they wanted to hear from Shukadeva. So, in each of these Mahapuranas, the avatars of the Lord are described. In this case, Kalki avatar is described. And he does a certain function, and he, the function is annihilating the demons in order to liberate them. And then also another function is to bring about the age of Satya, or Satya Yuga. Here's how it works. Imagine you have a bucket of paint and it's white, representing goodness. And you add a little passion, add a couple droppers full of red and stir. What happens? It becomes off-white. It's not white anymore, it's off-white. And we know that from passion, Kamesha, Krodesha, Rajoguna, Samudbhava, what happens is that ignorance results. Krodha. From passion comes anger. So add a couple droppers of blue and stir. And that's how it goes. For that action in passion, followed by the action in goodness, there's a reaction. That's more activities in passion and ignorance. Add a couple more droppers. Just keep stirring and stirring and stirring. And it gets so off-white that you can't even recognize the white anymore. It's just too much accelerated red and blue actions and reactions in passion and ignorance. it becomes like a vortex. You know what a vortex is? Man, you know what a vortex is, right? Like a whirlpool. If you have like a swirl of water in a pool, you put something on the outer perimeter of that swirl, it moves slowly around and around, but it'll be drawn to the center, and as it's drawn to the center, it goes down very quickly. Yes? That's the cycle of the four yugas, like that. Beginning. So where I'm going with this is, how does Satya Yuga begin after you get down and 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 down, really down? How does it go all the way back up to Satya Yuga? Next yuga is the white one. You get your white bucket of paint again. How's that happen? Kalki Avatar. Because he annihilates all the living entities, such that, these are all human beings, such that the ignorance and passion is completely gone, because the souls are liberated, and then there are great personalities who are no longer visible in this earthly plane that are engaging themselves in activities of pure goodness. Who are such personalities? One of them is Vedavyas. Vedavyas, a couple of nice things about Vedavyas. He's in the category of Chiran Jiva. What's a Chiran Jiva? It's a living entity that lives a long time. There's a list in Padma Purana of some of those who are amongst the Chiran Jivas. His lifetime spans long time. So long that he'll be around at the beginning of Satya Yuga, and he'll help to start Satya Yuga. If he's around, where is he? Maybe this is just mythology. There's no such thing as Vedavyas, and he's not around. Well, Madhvacharya found him. Because Vedavyas compiled the Vedas at the end of Dwarapa Yuga, and he's still around. He was still around for Madhvacharya to go and meet. Who is Madhvacharya? Those of you that go to Udupi, you know who Madhvacharya is. Who is Madhvacharya? Yeah. He's the knowledgeable spiritual master of the Sri Vaishnavas. He's the knowledgeable spiritual master of the Madhva, Brahma Madhva Sampradaya, as opposed to the Sri Sampradaya. He's in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. He lived in Udupi primarily. He traveled. And one of the places he traveled to was to Badrinath. In fact, the journey from Udupi to Badrinath that was performed around this time of the year was for the purpose of requesting Vyasadeva to verify his Bhagavad Gita commentary. Because you can't have anything that's authorized without having a teacher and having the teacher authorize it. So we went to meet with Vyasadeva. And where does Vyasadeva reside? Badrinath. So he went to Badrinath. Nobody saw Vyasadeva. But there's according to the biographers of Madhvacharya, there's a place called Upper Badri. In fact, it describes there are five levels of reality, and he's in the upper realm of reality. Just like in theoretical physics, there's higher dimensional space. Ladies, you won't know about this, but the guys will know some of it. Higher dimensional space, it's a theory of modern physics. The theory of modern physics has all kinds of theories. But one of their theories is there's space that we can't access unless you have the capacity to access. You know, they don't have an understanding of what capacity you need, how to get it, but there's higher dimensional. Just like in computers, websites is where everybody, but then there's some accesses that you need some security measure. You know, protect your website or the information. And then some are higher security and higher security and higher security. So upper boundary is like that. It's for people who are qualified. So because Madhvacharya was qualified, he was able to enter upper Badri. Even his principal associate couldn't. His number one disciple didn't have the qualification. He couldn't enter. But Madhvacharya entered. And it describes upper Badri, where Vyasadeva resides. And one of the descriptions that I can recall is that it's beyond anything worldly. It's like a transcendental place. It doesn't say it is a transcendental place. But, you know, in the Himalayas, at the after Kartik, what's going on in Badrinath? It's freezing cold. And ice and snow and everything. When they entered the upper, when he entered upper Badri, it was tropical paradise. Like, you know, Hawaiian Islands or something. But far more lavish. Millions of times, like, you know, beyond even the heavenly planets. And this is, you know, serious biographical stuff. This isn't a fairy tale by Charles Grimm or something. And he met Vyas, and Vyas received him very happily, and they had their discussions. In the course of the discussions, he disclosed his Bhagavad Gita commentary, and Vyas approved. So that became his, you know, now authorized. And he descended from upper Badri into the realm of Badri where the rest of his followers were, and, oh, where have you been? Oh, I went and saw Vyas. You're gone for a long time. And then they went back to, they traveled here and there, but they went back to Udupi. So every year, it's become a tradition, annual tradition. As we speak, some leading members of the Udupi Yatra, Udupi Mat, they go on pilgrimage, stopping at each of the places that Madhvacharya went. They don't enter upper Badri as Madhvacharya did. And then they come back and follow the same places where Madhvacharya visited. So it's a many thousand year old tradition. But they're very devoted to Madhvacharya, as you know, from your visits there. So all of that description is how Satya Yuga begins, along with Vyas and Vyas's ashram. There are other great sages who reside there with him, including Nara Narayan Rishi and other great, great, great personalities. So when Kalki Avatar appears and does his thing, it's during the conjunction of two yugas. What's a conjunction in Sanskrit? It's a sandhi. Just like we were breaking a codice yesterday morning. No, this morning. And there's a period of time when it's codice is over and the dwadasi begins. This morning it was 6:40 and ended at 9:04. That's a sandhi. It's the conjunction of the prior, the ekadasi day and the dwadasi day. So there's a little overlap. Conjunction means it's an overlap. And that's when, for our purposes, when we're supposed to break ekadasi. Because if you don't break ekadasi during that sandhi, you don't get the full benefit. So, the appearance of Kalki avatar comes at Yuga Sandhyayam. Yuga Sandhyayam. Sandhya. At the conjunction of the two yugas. The two yugas is the end of Kali and the beginning of Satya. So that's when Kalki avatar appears. Dayushu prayeshu rajasu, where the rajas become almost plunderers. Dayushu prayeshu rajasu. When Valmiki, before he became Valmiki, what was his profession? He's a plunderer. His name, in fact, was Dasyu. Not Dasa, but Dasyu. He was a plunderer. And Dasyu Prayeshu, almost plunderers, where the king is almost plunderer. The king's at the end of the age of Kali. So this is just mentioning. And then in the 12th canto, the detail. That's how the Bhagavatam works. This first canto is giving essences. That's why it's so important. Because we may not know the detail, but the essence, if we can understand the essence, you can understand the Bhagavatam. You're at the lotus feet of Krishna. Just like in relation to Lord Buddha, Prabhupada, I was discussing just this morning, but I'll cover it again because it's so strong. Prabhupada is explaining why theism is necessary. Because there's a strong voice in the world today that says you don't need God. That's called atheism. You don't need God. Just be good. Why do you need God? Everybody knows what is good, and just be good. Be like, it's Buddhism. Be nonviolent. Be compassionate to other living entities. Don't harm other living entities unnecessarily. That's a principle of goodness. But then what is harm? And what's the standard? The short answer is without God, then you don't have a standard. It's what I think. Another person is what they think. And a third person is what he thinks. And the rest of the world has their own idea of what's good. And we could have examples, but how do you establish goodness, or what is to be done, or dharma, is Bhagavan establishes dharma. That's the statement of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Dharmam hi sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Bhagavat, Prabhupada explains, is the form of the noun Bhagavan. That means in relation to Bhagavan becomes Bhagavat. Like the verse Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavata can be either person or book based upon in relation to Bhagavan. The value of the book or the value of the person is to the degree it's based upon Bhagavan or in relation to Bhagavan. Bhagavat. So, here's, I'll read what Prabhupada writes. Very nice. The whole theme of Vedic literature is to know the Supreme Lord, the individual soul, the cosmic situation, and the relation between all these items. So we have five items in Bhagavad Gita, right? Five topics. Who would like to list those five topics of Bhagavad Gita? I see one hand. I see. Go ahead.
Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala, Karma.
Okay. Did you get it right? Okay. Of all of these, one is the source, and the others are emanations from that source. Ishvara is the source. Even Kala. Kala is time. And Krishna says, time I am, but it's an energy. Kala Shakti. It's Krishna's time energy. Shakti indicates the possessor of Shakti, or Shaktiman. Krishna is the one. All the others are dependent upon the one. So, same. So we say in simple language, Prabhupada said the whole of Bhagavad Gita is the study of matter, spirit, and the controller of both. So the one that's the controller of the both determines matter and spirit, and the laws that govern them, the laws of matter, the laws of physics, is derived by, or determined by Krishna's establishing. And if Krishna can establish, Krishna can also change. Gravity, for example. Krishna can change it. Krishna can make weightlessness. Not only, you know, flying around in a spaceship, beyond the gravity of this earth, but he can make rocks weightless. He can float planets in the universe, and he can make a bridge going to Lanka. He doesn't have to ask the help of Samudra, although he did, because he wanted to give Samudra some service. But where does Samudra get his capacity from? From the same person who was asking him, can you help me? It's Leela. Or Lagima Siddhi, the capacity to become lighter than the lightest, to float, to fly in a magic carpet. You know of that one? Yes? That's a yes? Okay. Or, you know, fly on a broomstick. So where do those, whether it's black arts or mystic powers, where does that come from? It comes from the source. But Krishna can make things very light. Krishna can make things so heavy you can't move them. Like he exhibited the the city where he became so heavy was with Trinavarta. It was going up and up and up and up and up, and Krishna became heavy and heavy and heavy and heavy. So he tried to get him off, and he couldn't get him off, so it came crashing down and hit a big stone slab and was finished. Trinavarta. Because Krishna can become very heavy. Or he exhibited that mystic power before the same Leela. He was on the lap of Mother Jasoda, and it was time for the Trinavarta pastime, so Krishna became very heavy. Mother Jasoda couldn't hold Krishna on her lap anymore, so she put him on the ground. He had become too heavy. Little baby. Too heavy. Not, you know, like a 4-year-old who thinks he's still a baby, but a baby. Too heavy. Because Krishna can exhibit that potency. So, the personality of God that exhibits transcendental power is the idea. He appeared, Kalki avatar appeared at the juncture of the Dwarapa and Kali Yuga. He appeared at a time when the kings become like robbers, dacoits. Dasyu prayeshu rajasu. And it goes into detail describing what family he would appear in. He would appear in a Brahmana family. And the father's name would be Vishnu Yasha. And not only that, not here but elsewhere, it gives the village. Shambhala. So, in India today, there's a fellow going around saying that he's the incarnation of Kali. He's Kali Avatar. Kalki, excuse me. Kalki Avatar. Have you heard of this fellow? That's a yes. You've heard of this fellow. Apparently he, you know, has appearances in public and goes on stage, and I don't know what he does, but he has at least some number of people convinced that he's Kalki Avatar. But if people were knowledgeable in Vedas, they could easily say, excuse me, sir, but what's your father's name? And what village were you born in? And where's your white horse? And what capacity do you have to liberate souls? If you don't fit the description of, and you know, and also the time, according to the time that's described in the scripture, it's at the end of Satyug. It's during the Sandhi. You know, people that know astronomy can calculate, and the Vedas can calculate very easily and say, excuse me, but you're a fraud. I hope you don't mind my saying so, but you're a fraud. You should be arrested. Because there's, it's very clear, and you know, it's explicitly, here's Prabhupada's purport. Here's another foretelling of the advent of Lord Kalki, the incarnation of Godhead. He is to appear at the conjunction of the two yugas, namely the end of Kali Yuga, the beginning of Satyug. Four cycles of the four yugas, namely Satyatrayas, Dwarapa, and Kali, rotate like calendar months. The present Kali Yuga lasts for 432 years, 42,000 years. out of which we had passed only 5,000 after the battle of Kurukshetra and the end of the regime of Maharaj Parikshit. So there are 427,000 years balance to be finished. That alone is enough to say that's that Kalki avatar. It's a pretender. Therefore, at the end of this period, the incarnation of Kalki will take place, as foretold in the Srimad Bhagavatam, father, village, mentioned. As above mentioned, all these foretellings will prove to be factual in chronological order. That is the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. There's elaboration about Kalki avatar, as mentioned in the 12th canto. Again, the family, the village, Brahmin family, and by that time, the qualifications of people in this age will have diminished and diminished and diminished and diminished, and it's the conditions are horrible. Duration of life is said that one who becomes in his early 20s. Do you know any people in their early 20s? They'll be considered ripe old men. Like today, somebody that's in their 80s or 90s. Or ripe old men. At the end of Kali, mid-20s. Ripe old men. Duration of life is greatly depleted. It's greatly depleted because of so many terrible conditions of the age of Kali. Even to find a Brahmin at the end of the age of Kali is going to be very rare. Stature or height will be reduced to heights of like pygmies. Pygmies live in forests. They're tribes of pygmies. And they're like midgets. They're little short people. Even they're adult, fully adult. Pygmy-like in stature. And as far as quality, same thing. Good qualities gone. Apparently some special exceptions. But generally speaking, terrible character. Good qualities gone. Because good qualities follow God consciousness. Not that God consciousness follows good qualities. Although that's a contradictory statement in certain ways to what is described about Kalki avatar, because people had already become atheists. Worse, they were misusing the authority of the Vedas to justify their atheistic tendency, particularly animal killing. So the description about Buddha is that he tricked the atheists. He deceived those who were opposed to theism. Sammohaya suradvisham. There's moha and sammoha. Those he deluded or bewildered the dvisham, those who are against or envious of the suras, the devotees, the followers of the codes of the Vedas. Those they're not only atheists, but they were against the theists strongly, and he misled them trick them. And he tricked them basically by putting them again on the path of theism. The path of theism says, be nonviolent. But he didn't say in the name of God, he just said, be nonviolent. Although he was God, or an incarnation of God. But he did not describe Sambandh again, because he didn't even describe where the creation comes from. Indirectly, he does by saying, where is our ultimate destination? For the Buddhist, what's the ultimate destination? Nirvana. Enter Nirvana. And what is that Nirvana? Shunya. It's nothingness. How attractive, huh? Enter a state of nothingness. Because the teaching is, actually, that's all there is. There isn't anything except nothingness. And enlightenment is to enter into the realization of nothingness. And where does everything come from? Nothingness. And what exists now? Nothing. And where does it enter into? Nothingness. It's word jugglery, and therefore it may sound profound, but it's not. It's just negation. Which is the same as Mayavad philosophy, which according to the eighth canto of Bhagavatam is what it's the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. Lord Shiva was instructed to teach covered Buddhism. Because covered Buddhism, where it says, what does everything come from? Brahman. What exists now? Brahman. Anything else that appears to exist doesn't exist. It's false. All that exists is Brahman. And in the state of ultimate liberation, what exists? Brahman. But what, you ask that person what Brahman is, and it's not the effulgence of the personality of Godhead, it's a state of nothingness. Well, what is it? It's not this. Neti, neti. Not this, not this, not this, not this. What is it? It's not this. What's that? It's another way of saying nothingness. The conception of Brahman, of the modern Mayavad philosophers, is not what Brahman is. It's a philosophized nothingness. It's not even a positive somethingness. It's nothingness. But they just give it a different name and call it Brahman. Very dry. It's not even what Krishna describes in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita as very difficult. Because what Krishna describes in the 12th chapter is meditation on Brahman. They don't meditate on Brahman, they meditate on not this, not this, not this. Which is nothingness. And they have a process, the neti neti process. Analyzing things. You know, is this the source of everything? No, that's not it. Okay. Then, you know, not this, not this, not this. What are you left with? You're left with Brahman. Well, what's Brahman? It's not this. It's nothingness. The absence of this, that's what it is. It's like, you know, eighth grade science. If you have, you maybe remember this, I remember, bell jar experiment. Put this very thick glass, you get a pump. It removes everything from the bell jar, because your experiment is to make a vacuum where there's a state of nothingness. You pump out of the air, and any moisture that's in the air, and certainly all solid objects. So what's inside? Nothing. We would say there is something inside, and that's space. Well, it's space, and there's nothing. No, it's space. It's space. It's Akash. What's that subtle element that has no earth, water, fire, and air? It's Akash. It's an element. It's not nothing. Even their state of nothing is something. Anyway. Brahman, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham. Brahman is the basis of everything, the modes of nature and all the varieties of things that are manifest by the modes of nature. Brahman is the basis. And Krishna is the basis of Brahman. So Krishna is inside the bell jar. Because Krishna is everywhere. Even in bell jars. Even in space. Because space is one of his energies, and therefore, the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, everything rests in me. And I am within everything. Behold my mystic opulence. So Kalki is also spoken of in future tense from when the Bhagavatam was written. And Kalki appeared. Excuse me, Buddha appeared. The second one that's mentioned in future tense is Kalki. Kalki hasn't appeared yet. Prabhupada makes this strong assertion, he will appear. Just wait and see. Stay around for another 427,000 years and you can find out. Because that's the cycle. It's 432. Here's another mathematical thing. I'll forward something mathematical to you to look at it. Somebody did some, you know, the symmetry of math. Did I send it? Okay, symmetry of math. So here's how the four yugas work. Each yuga, the Kali Yuga is 432,000. The duration of the prior yuga is 432,000 plus 432,000. Yeah. And the yuga prior to that is that prior yuga plus 432,000. And Satya Yuga is that prior yuga plus 432,000. So it turns out to be in the period of four yugas, you just add a multiplier of 10. Because what is 1 plus 2? Plus 3, plus 4. It's 10. So the duration of four yugas is 10 times Kali Yuga, or 432,000 years is the duration of four yugas. And then there's 1,000. Multiply that by 1,000. That's the duration of Brahma's day. Multiply by 2 because he has nights of equal duration. Multiply by 365, that's the duration of a year. Multiply by 1,000 by 100, that's for 100 years. And that's the duration of the creation. Very simple math. Not complicated. Although the system, the unfolding of the system is very complex. And within those yugas, so many forms of the Lord appear. Okay, I didn't complete what I thought I would be able to complete because I spent so much time with Kalki. We just covered text 25, so we can later we'll cover 26 and 27. Any comments or questions? Yeah.
Maharaj, the sages ask two questions. One is specifically about incarnations, about Lord Krishna and other incarnations. Basically, different lila, different avatars of the Krishna devotee described as well as he, there are two questions are seeming to be similar.
Which two questions?
Means, and pastimes of the Lord.
Yeah.
And another is that why the different he performs pastimes also the avatars appear. Or the
you're asking of the six questions why two of them seem quite similar? That's what you're
asking? Yeah, yes, ma'am.
Well, emphasis goes to Krishna because he's the source of all. The question specifically is for what reason did he appear? Did Krishna appear as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki? And then a separate question is describe those incarnations. Anything else?
Well, you are mentioning at the end of the Kali Yuga there are no good qualities. And also you are mentioning about the qualities, the good qualities, the source is Krishna. So at this point of time, how do we see those qualities in a spiritual master? And
by becoming devotee of Krishna. And then good qualities follow. It's the teaching of the Bhagavatam. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavat yukinchana sarvayar ganais tatrasa mahasate sara. Then the opposite is there. Harav abhaktasya kuto mahadguna. For the abhaktas of Hari, harav abhaktasya kuto mahadguna. You won't find good qualities. But for those who are bhaktas, all good qualities. Because we can say it in terms of Krishna or say it in terms of the soul. Let's say it in terms of the soul. We take a spark and the spark goes far from the fire. What happens? The glowing quality of the spark diminishes. Maybe even just become a piece of carbon just sitting on the ground. No glowing at all. Take that same piece of carbon, put it back in the fire. What happens? Glowing capacity is restored. So on the platform of the soul, how do we get good qualities? Associate with the fire. Associate with Krishna. In devotional service. In Madhya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 22, verses 42 through 48, something like that, Lord Chaitanya is discussing with Sanatana Goswami, and he's describing the characteristics of the soul. He lists 26 characteristics of the soul, very similar to other lists that we find elsewhere. He starts with humility. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna starts with humility. But in that list of 26 qualities, there's one that's called by our acharyas the Svarup Lakshana, the primary characteristic. The other 25 are called Tatastha Lakshana, or marginal characteristics. When one can accomplish the primary characteristic, principal characteristic, Svarup Lakshana, the other 25 follow. And that one is Krishna Eka Sharana. So become nice devotee of Krishna, even in this age of Kali.
Mm-hmm.
How to do that? Get in the fire. Of particularly Bhagavad Katha, hearing the glories of the personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, through the person and book Bhagavat. Does that answer your question? Anything else? Yes?
When we hear this about this incarnation, about this thing, so what is our, how do you take these things and represent them?
I'm not clear what your question is. Do it again.
We hear that this...
At that part I got. We hear these descriptions. Then what's your question?
This Kaliga is going to come and so many things are going to happen. At the moment, is what we have to take from these things.
Well, one is don't be tricked by somebody who appears in South India and says, I'm Kalki Avatar. That's one thing we can take from that. And another thing that we can take from that is that, you know, well, two other things, that the Lord will appear and we can have confidence because it's stated in Scripture. But another thing is, as I went through and explained this vortex, we can understand the science of how it works. He comes just to, like, you know, put a full stop on the deteriorated qualities, persons that are just totally losing it. He's very merciful. And he exhibits that mercy in the form of relieving those souls of their, all of their reactions to all of their sins, and they're liberated. While it might look like, oh my God, look at this, God's appearing and killing everybody. What kind of religion is that? So, when one understands the purpose of the Lord, that the purpose of the Lord is fulfilled, if that's, you know, by so doing. And it's fulfilling the purpose, one of the three purposes, Pritranaya Sadhanam Vinyashaya Traduskatam, in ways that's attainable, because people at the end of the age of Kali don't have the capacity to understand anything.
Mm-hmm.
So they're liberated. And then start Sati Yoga, it's just a function. That matches purpose. It's not just because by the Lord's arrangement he could have everyone wiped out by swine flu or AIDS or something. When I entered the country, all the employees are walking around with these blue masks. Thinking, wow, this is serious stuff. That's what we're supposed to take away. He's very, Lord, even if he looks like destruction, it's very merciful. It's not destruction as somebody that goes on a killing spree or something. All those souls become liberated. So we don't have to, and that's not enjoined for us. We're enjoined to follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who does it very differently. Those who are demoniac, he relieves them of their demoniac spirit by his mission of mercy, and we're to be instruments of Lord Chaitanya. Okay, anything else? Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. You died.